is KD2AIT, net control for the Black River Valley Service Net. My name is Jeff. This net is held every evening at 9 p.m. on the Boomville Amateur Radio Club repeater on frequency 146.655 MHz. The repeater is located on Jackson Hill, 2.5 miles southwest of Boomville. This is an informal net. All interested parties welcome to check in with or without traffic. Emergency traffic has priority at all times. Can break in at any time. Is there any emergency traffic? Are there any portable, battery-powered mobile stations wishing to check in? This is KD2AIT, net control for the Black River Valley Service Net. I'll now take calls from regular members and guests.
KA2ZOZ, hi Jeff.
Sorry, I had a mouthful of apple, and you keep here.
Okay, there's two. We'll start at the top with K2ZNZ. Jack, good evening. What's going on tonight?
Yeah, good evening, Jeff. Everybody on board listening and so on and so forth. Kind of a cold day down here. About an inch of snow overnight. But the sun, it's a pretty good sun this morning. Around noon, I read about 37 degrees. I think that's pretty close to the high here. Right now, we're sitting at 32.5, right at freezing. It's been there for a couple hours, but I think it's supposed to go down again. Looking forward kind of towards this weekend. It's going to moderate a little bit. I mean, you know, we're not going to have any 80s, I hope. But they are talking with a possibility of 50s and maybe even reaching 60. So that won't be bad. So are you up to camp? You can let me know that. I know you're planning to go up this weekend, but I don't know whether you went up through the week or not. 7 feet all around, KA2ZOZ.
Yeah, Jack, we're up here at camp. What do we have? We have 22 degrees here up at camp. Yeah, they're saying it's supposed to warm up here by the weekend. We'll see. I wanted to get up here a couple days early and try to get some hot while nobody else is up here. But all right, well, maybe we'll get that warmer weather for the weekend by the time I go home. I wouldn't mind that. I want it nice and cold. I'm out here hunting, but I'd like it nice and warm when I go home. So we'll have to see which way it turns out. All right, well, thanks for checking in, Jack, and we'll probably catch you later there on Octet. N2KPR. Let's see, we just talked for about a half an hour, so I should remember your name. It's Rich or Lloyd? I can't remember now. I'm sorry. What's going on tonight?
Yeah, it's Rich. By the way, I got to ask you a question. Who is your grandfather?
My grandfather was Harry, WA2OFK.
I'm definitely sorry. Yeah, I've talked to Harry quite a few times. Okay. That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure when you said it. Well, maybe I'm wrong here. Hey, good evening, Jay. And yes, I'll be down. And after that, you got me all talked out. No, I don't know what else to say. Outside of it's nippy, and it's that time of year, so that's about all I can add. That's your KPF.
Well, I tell you, Rich, you said you had a hard time getting in this repeater. I can't imagine why. You're coming in here loud and strong. There's no static or anything. In fact, you're coming in here just as strong as you could possibly be coming in.
Well, I had a homebrew antenna outside, and they started complaining about it, and somebody was starting to mess with it. It ended up broken a wire on the inside of the antenna. So I pulled that one in, and I put a little mobile out there. Got a helical coil in the middle of it. It cost me about $20. Threw it out there and just set it on my air conditioning shell and let them bellyache about that. So, not on their property, it's on mine. I rent this place, so I guess I can have it on my rental property. I don't know how the PRV1's going to take, you know, going to, what it's going to do with that, but if we get into a battle, we get into a battle over it. Not going to worry too much about it. But outside of that, it's, I'm pretty happy with it so far. The only vehicles that I can't get into, or I used to be able to get into, was, Cooperstown, that was it. That's what came here.
Well, roger that. You're coming in here with full quieting. You sound great. So, just to let you know, we try to be here every night at 9 o'clock. So feel free to check in any time. I'm usually the one running the net, but on Fridays and Saturdays, we have different net controllers, and we're trying to get more people to take it over. So I try to do it every night, but I'm a busy man, and sometimes I can't always do it at 9 o'clock, but I try to anyway. But thanks for checking in, Rich. You sound great here. Your signal is perfect. All right, this is KD2AIT, Net Control for the Black River Valley Service Net, looking for check-ins.
This is Kilo Bravo 2 Echo Foxtrot Bob in Camden. Over.
KB2EF, Bob, good evening. Long time no see. What's going on tonight?
I wanted to return the favor. I wanted to see if I could hit Boonville from Camden and how it sounded, because the wife travels up that way, and her call is Kilo 2 Sierra Alpha Charlie, Strategic Air Command. She's got a system in her car that I put in, so she should be able to access it when she's up that way. Over.
I would imagine so. You're sounding fine, too. I mean, maybe way in the background. Sounds like you might be frying a little bacon, but not much. And to be honest with you, that could just be my end here. So you're sounding great. I don't know what you're using up there, but you're coming in here perfect.
Well, I'm running low power. I mean, I can turn the wick up if need be.
Completely not necessary. You sound, you're definitely better than you even need to be. It sounds great. Well, thanks for checking in, Bob. Like I said, was saying to Rich there before, we're here every night. Feel free to check in whenever you'd like. We always like to get as many check-ins here as we can. All right, this is KD2AIT, Net Control for the Black River Valley Service Net, looking for check-ins. Let's see, it's going to be a quiet one tonight. Well, for myself, I had to work today. Got up extra early and got started early because I wanted to get done early. And fortunately, I couldn't get done as early as I wanted to. I wanted to get up here to camp before it got dark, but that didn't quite work out. So got up here and got the place fired up. As soon as I got up here, it was about 25 degrees inside the camp, and right now it's let's see, it's about 53 here in the camp. So the wood stove's catching up, and it's finally starting to get a little toasty. Actually, I think this thing's a little off because the temperature sensor is right on the wall, so it's probably actually a little bit warmer in here, and it feels warm. I'm just sitting in here in t-shirt, so it feels warm. Plan on doing some hunting tomorrow, and that's the goal. And I'm not going to start out early, though. Haven't been having much luck early, and so I'm going to try to change it up a little bit this week, and that's the whole goal. I'm not here on the weekend, which is a change, and I'm going to start hunting at 10 instead of 6 or 5 or whatever I've been starting at. So anyway, that's about it. Are there any comments, queries, or late check-ins at this time? This is KD2AIT.
KB2EF query.
Go ahead, Bob.
Are you currently transmitting from the location that I checked on your website?
Yeah, the yurt. Yep. Yes, I am.
That is super. Did you build that yourself?
Roger. It comes in a kit, and I had a contractor build the platform, which is the, you know, the foundation. A buddy of mine actually built it, and then we put up the rest of it in a day.
Wow. From what I could see on the photos, it looks like you have 6x6s on concrete piers.
Roger, that's correct.
beautiful. That is definitely Viking in nature.
Well, I got to get some pictures in there of the inside of it, because the outside doesn't do it justice at all. You should see the inside. It's quite a remarkable structure in here. And even now, after it was almost 2 years now, I still can't get over how great it is inside.
Well, on your website, there are pictures of the interior, and I was quite impressed. And one of the first photos that comes up is the LED overheads, and it reminded me of Studio A down in Manhattan at the Power Station recording studio.
Oh, Roger. Yeah, I forgot I put those up there. That's right. Yeah, I did it. I don't get to that site as often as I should. I guess, you know, working on websites all day, I just tend to forget my own. But, yeah, those LED lights are actually the recycled LED lights. I have an uncle of mine who works on Alabama, and he's an electrician, and a lot of the signs you see on businesses in the cities, they're all lit with these 12-volt LED lights to save power. But, you know, eventually those lights, some of them blow out, or usually just one or two, and, you know, it kind of messes up the signs. So about every 5 years, they go through them, restring them up, and they just throw the lights out. So he just keeps them, and every once in a while, he sends me a box in the mail, and that one string you see there in the picture, that's all hooked through a wire here. It runs right into some deep cell batteries I have that are charged from the solar panel array, and they don't use very much power at all. I could probably leave them on without even having the batteries being charged for probably 2 weeks, and they light up pretty much the whole place here.
Yeah, it's quite impressive. Matter of fact, I just made Sherry some supper, and I mentioned it to her, and she said, oh, what's the URL? So she's looking up now, and there's the LED lights photo. You can scroll down and see the interior. It's amazing. It is absolutely fantastic, Jeff.
Thank you. It's a quick way and inexpensive way to put up a camp, especially in a remote location. And they're considered by most municipalities up here as a temporary structure, which is nice because it saves you a lot of permitting issues. As long as you're not going to sit there and live in it, you know, so it's just a camp. It's a lot, you know, there's no real huge, it doesn't put a big footprint on the environment.
Yeah, Sherry's scrolling through the photos now. It's, to say the least, it's impressive. Just off the top of your head, without putting your feet in the fire, what would you say is the diameter of the floor?
It's 30 feet.
Oh, that is slick. And we'll look at the outside picture now with your pickup truck and the ladder on top. And the dog.
Roger that. Little wimpy there in front of the truck. Yeah, the floor is 30, the whole structure is 30 feet in diameter, and the walls are 7 feet high, and the peak, and the ceiling is 15 feet high. So you could actually put a loft in here if you wanted to and have a second floor, but since it's usually just me or my sons in here, we keep it one giant open space.
Okay, being a structural type person, is that a canvas exterior? And what is the snow load rating on that?
Not being a architectural person, I can't recall what the snow rating was. All I know is I compared it to what was required for Herkimer County, in this, which is where the year it is, and it exceeds what's required up here. Because I, when you order these, you can get, like, there's two different types you can get. You can get the standard model, which is more what they have out in the west and you know, southwest, or you get the snow load version, which has, you know, they upgrade the rafters to 2x6s, and they put in studs for the wall supports, and there's a few other upgrades for it, but it can hold I mean, I came up here in the winter time, and there was 2 to 3 feet of snow on the roof, and just got a fire going, and it all slid off. So I mean, it can hold. I've seen videos of people with these up in Colorado where there's 6 or 7 feet of snow up on the roof without a problem. The roof material is made out of vinyl. It's an architectural roofing material, and it has a 20-year warranty, or excuse me, a 15-year warranty on the roof. And the sides are a polyester, like a tent material. But in between the roofing material and in between the side, there's a layer of insulation and a liner. So it's not just one sheet over it. There's a reflectix and insulation, and there's a liner on top of that.
Yeah, that gives you your air barrier. That's real good. I see your solar cells. Is that your only source of energy, the two solar panels?
Roger, there's a third now. But yeah, that's the only source of power here. You can't get power. We're in the Adirondack Park, so they won't even, there's not even a power line on the road here.
Good old APA. Well, you know what they say about New York State? When the sun is shining, your solar panels work. When the sun is not shining, there's usually a lot of wind, and I've got a couple ideas on some wind generators.
Roger, I've taken a look at a couple of those micro generators, and I've thought about it. Let's just put it that way. They're a little noisy, at least the ones I've seen. But up here at camp, I have a little gas generator if I have to, if I'm up here for at a period of time that's not a lot of fun. I can just run the generator and run up the batteries. It doesn't happen very often. About once or twice a year I have to do that. So not really that worried about it. But let me not forget about the net here. I love talking about this place, don't get me wrong, but I got let me get back to net here, and let's see, are there any comments, queries, or late check-ins at this time?
KC2NBU.
KC2NBU, Ray, good evening. What's going on tonight?
We've got 28 degrees, and we went auctioning today and came home with nothing. But I've been enjoying listening to your description of your camp. I would think they'd be slippery enough on the roof that usually your snow would slide off without having to heat it up.
It depends. When you first get up here in the after the first snow, there's usually enough heat in the camp that makes it just that roof just enough so it melts that first initial snow, so then the rest sticks to it. But after you get that first load of it off of there, and then the place cools down, as long as there's no snow going on while it cools down, then after that, the snow slides right off, but you got to get in here and get that first snow off, usually.
Yeah, well, on my camper, I put 3 old car tires in the center of the roof and then put the tarp on, and that makes it so I never have to shovel the roof. It just slides right off.
The vinyl in here is actually kind of not sticky, I don't know the word, it has texture to it. So, but once it's dry and you get that snow off of it and then it cools down while it's dry, then I don't know, it kind of seals it up a little bit. The snow doesn't stick as much, but, you know, there's, as long as you have a heat source in here, there'll never be any snow on the roof. It's unlike a house. But I think part of that's just because of the reflectix insulation, which is a great insulation for radiant heat, but doesn't quite hold in the air as well as, you know, say fiberglass or other traditional insulation.
Yep, it's something I noticed before I insulated the garage. It would warm up just as easy as it does insulated. It just, when the furnace would shut off, it cooled off a lot quicker. Yeah, the heat would go right out of it.
Roger, very similar for here. I have a forum actually about yurts that I run, that I own. It's called Yurt Forum, and one of the biggest conversations on there is this time of year, especially, is about insulation, because a lot of people try to build these to live in, full time. Which, I mean, when you're down south or you're out in the southwest, that's not really a big deal. But when you're in the northeast, most of the states have pretty strict insulation rules. So people are looking for ways to comply with local regulations. And as nice as reflect is, especially in the heat, it's very nice in the heat because it reflects most of the heat out. It doesn't quite, you know, they don't, as much as they try to talk it up as far as R value, it does not hold warm air. Like a pellet stove wouldn't work very well in a yurt because forced air heat would just go, you know, right out. Whereas a radiant heat works very well. So anyway, for a hunting camp, it is ideal up here. I just I can't say enough about this place. To be honest with you, I was skeptical when I first got it, but it was worth a shot. I figured for the price anyway, it was worth a shot. And I have been nothing but more. I've been over satisfied as far as the way the place turned out. All right, Ray. Well, thanks for checking in, and hopefully you have better luck on the next auction. And I know that's a hit or miss business sometimes. Sometimes the going's good, and like we were talking about the other night, you don't have enough trailers to get them back, and then sometimes you go up there and you come back with a bunch of empty trailers. So hopefully you'll have a better luck on the next shot. All right, this is KD2AIT, Net Control for the Black River Lake Service Net. Are there any comments, queries, or late check-ins? And this will be the final call for the Black River Valley Service Net. Any comments, queries, or late check-ins? Okay, hearing none, I'll now close the Black River Valley Service Net. Return the frequency of radio which you use. I'd like to thank Jack, Rich, Bob, and Ray for checking in tonight. Say 73, is anyone listening in? This is KD2AIT. Bob, you still there, KB2EF?
K2FAC, he's coming on over.
What do you think? You've been over there looking at it. What do you think?
You talking to Sherry or me, Jeff?
Sorry, Sherry there. What? Either one of you. I know you had a few minutes there to look at some of the pictures.
Very, very nice. I was just looking at the faces under the floor. I know there's one place out of New Hampshire that builds them, runs around anywhere from 11,000 to 15,000, but I don't, I'm not sure what all that includes. I know it's pretty much the basic, you know, it's pretty standard, but when you get into putting in the supports underneath and so forth, I'm kind of curious cost-wise what they run.
Well, a lot of it depends, but yeah, there's different options. There's one. Yeah, there's one in New Hampshire. There's one in Vermont that a lot of people are pretty high on right now. It's called White Mountain Yurts. I don't remember what the exact name of the website is. It might just be whitemountainyurts.com, but you can just Google it and find it. A lot of people are pretty happy with that because, you know, they're built for the same climate that we are here. There's also a company in Tabor, New York. What's it called? It's called Shirley Yurts. Surely yurts.com. They're a little bit different. I mean, I probably wouldn't buy a 30-foot yurt from him, but if you're looking for something small, you know, like a you know, 16-footer or 20-footer, then that would be you know, more along the lines. But he usually has a display up at the you know, at the state fair or the you know, the local fairs around here. Usually has a display about them, but yeah, they're pretty. I mean, the one I got here was a Pacific yurt, and I'm definitely more than happy with it. I can't remember the exact price of what it was without shipping, but it was in that range that you're talking about.
Yeah, it doesn't overall. It doesn't look that difficult to put up. I think I remember the conversation you and a friend did it in a day, but. Yeah, very, very doable, something Bob and I could do. If the kit was delivered, I'm sure we could put it up.
No, it wasn't just me and a friend. It was me and a few friends that put it up. The 30-footer definitely requires more than two people. it requires some scaffolding, and I would say at least four, you know, brawny people that, because the roof weighs a lot. That roof fabric, that roof vinyl probably weighs about 300 pounds, so you got to carry it up, and you got to carry it through the center. I mean, most of the rest of it's not very heavy, but that part is very heavy, and you know, and it requires a little bit of muscle.
So what you're saying is the right type of beer and food, you should be able to get it done, no problem.
That's exactly what you need. Those are the right tools.
Not to mention ladders and scaffolding.
Definitely ladders and scaffolding. We went with the scaffolding route because if you have a smaller one that's like 20 feet or smaller, then you can definitely do it with two people. But once you start getting, once you add that little more weight onto it, it's a whole world of difference, because you got to realize you're holding up that center ring. That center ring is very heavy, and then you got to put in these huge rafters into it, which are also heavy. And there's no one person going to sit there and hold it. It's just not going to happen. Not when you get to the bigger rings.
Yeah, even if I was saying even something like a 20-foot one is, yeah, big enough for two people and just to kind of hang out in the woods, have a place near a pond or a creek or a lake or something along those lines, and be easy to heat, easy to take care of.
Sure, I know people that do that with a 15-footer. I have a 30-footer just because I got, you know, my sons, I have, you know, I got four kids and one on the way, so I wanted a big place, but I mean, honestly, if it was just me and the wife, I could have easily got away with an 15 to 20 feet, somewhere in there, and, you know, you just, with one of these, you can't make them any bigger, so I got the biggest one I could afford at the time.
Thank you for the help.
Go ahead there, Rich, or, yeah, Rich.
Yeah, by the way, it hurt for Bob and his wife to go over to Yahoo.com, not Yahoo, yeah, well, Yahoo groups, and search for groups with that are in there. I know there's quite a few gear groups in there, come to think of it. And get into some of these tiny house and small house groups, and because people that have yours are also in those too. And go to YouTube and Google yours and small houses, and they'll be surprised what you're going to find. There's a lot of different kinds out there, and to keep you.
Roger that. I have my own website about them. Matter of fact, when I first started building, when I first started considering building a yurt, there wasn't that much information on the net about it, so I started my own website about it and started asking questions. And then as I learned the answers, you know, I created the website. It got bigger and bigger. So if you go to yurtforum.com, Yankee Uniform Romeo Tango Forum.com, you'll see, that's actually, I own that website, and you'll see a lot of information about them there, and you'll see a lot of pictures of a bunch of different kinds, not just my kind. My yurt is a architectural yurt. It's designed, you know, in the United States by people, you know, United States engineers, but you'll also see a lot of different kinds from Mongolia and Turkish yurts and yurts in the UK. And there are a lot of different, like, very ornate ones.
Yep, definitely. I really enjoy it. And I do a lot of, I'm joining more and more groups every day, because eventually I do want to build myself a small place on a small piece of land that I can get out and do my own gardening and stuff like that, you know. Far enough away from everything, so if I see one of those, see some Adirondack beef, I can take one down, you know, when I need one. But, I just can't wait, but I don't know if I'm going to do it in New York State. That's debatable.
Roger, I hear you, and no doubt about that. It's one of the nice things about these structures, anyways. You can set them up in those little remote places, and then if you change your mind, you know what, you can take them down. You got, I mean, you can't usually take the platform with you, but you can take the rest of it down, pack it up, and move it somewhere else. And that's what I like about it. The most permanent part of this place here is actually the base, but the rest of it is, you know, if I don't want to, but I mean, if I ever wanted to, I could take the whole thing down and back it right up into a, not quite a pickup truck, but a trailer anyway.
Yeah, that's true. You really have to take the base unless you made it in sections. But then you need a tractor trailer for that, so. But they get a lot of design ideas out there. And I'm still thinking maybe I'll just build a little place on a trailer and leave it at that. That way I take it wherever I go. Be like a turtle. And I'm going to leave this frequency and go over and check in at that then. So I'll catch you later. And Bob, Julie, both have a great evening. And to keep you up.
Take it easy, Bob. We'll catch up with you later.
That was Bob, that was Rich. You were talking to Bob before and I put it in. Hit the kids here.
Whoops, I'm sorry. All you guys with these three and four letter names, sometimes I get them confused. all right, Rich, you have a good evening and we'll catch up with you later. Yeah, if I wasn't up here at camp, Bob, I'd check out your website too, but I'm kind of remote here. I don't get much internet access up here.
Jeff, there was a double. I don't know if it was on this repeater that someone was trying to get in, or if there's another 655 that I'm hearing.
There is one out of Rochester that sometimes doubles with us. We don't double with them because they have a PL.
Rochester? Boy, they were doing a dead heat with you.
Well, I gave him a chance to to come in, but I'm assuming it must be the Rochester repeater. I don't know. I know a lot of guys out there in Liverpool, Syracuse, and then they have trouble sometimes with the Rochester repeater coming in on us.
And now I'm wondering if I should put a 2-meter antenna up on top of the tower. I better make it a pair of directional beams. I'm only running a... If you've been in ham radio a while, the old Ringo Ranger 2, one of the best 2-meter antennas ever built, and they stopped making them from what I understand. It's only up about 20 feet right now.
Roger. My grandfather had one of those. Matter of fact, I probably am going to have it here soon. He just passed away, and I've basically been told I'm inheriting all the radio equipment because there's nobody in the family who's a ham. I've already got half of it at my house, and I believe that's one of the pieces of his equipment, but I have to get over there and take it down myself. Up here at camp, I just have one of those, what do you call them, the Slim Jim J-pole. It's basically a strap that's designed as like a J-pole.
KPR?
Go ahead, KPR.
Yeah, back here again. Now, this time I'm here for last time, looking for anybody who wants to check in.
KD2AIT, good evening, no traffic.
This is November 2 Whiskey Bravo X-ray, good evening, no traffic.
KC2NBU, good evening, no traffic.
Okay, KD2AIT, Jeff. WT. M2, WBX. That's him?
Hey, this is Dennis.
Dennis, I apologize. It's been a while since I've heard your call signs. And KB2NBU, right. Thank you all for checking in. Anybody else? Okay, make this final call for after. Never heard. Guys, thank you much for letting me jump in here. Have a great evening, and we'll catch you again some other night. That's a good deal.
Good evening, Rich. Thanks for the octet. KD2AT. I don't remember where we were in the conversation there, Bob. Sorry.
It's irrelevant. Sherry and I are just relaxing with Wild Turkey 101.
I'm not that far behind you. I'm up here at camp. I'm having a nice cold old Vienna, actually. Something I used to drink when I was in college, and then I gave it up for quite a few years. And then recently, after moving back home, I've gotten a taste for it again. So brought some of that up here with me at camp, although it's not keeping me as warm as I'm sure the Wild Turkey would.
Well, in my younger years, I was a scotch drinker, lost the taste for it, and got hooked on bourbon. And at 69 years of age, I've been drinking bourbon for quite some time. Jim Beam is my favorite, but I have been known to drink Wild Turkey 101, and I'll switch off to a little once in a while to a little Jack Daniels. But my wife is, you know, she's one of those people that has to be single malt, 18-year-old scotch.
One of those.
Hi.
Yeah, I don't drink that much scotch, but when I do, that's a single malt kind of what I like to drink myself. I'm not for that that rock cut stuff, but I know there's a crowd out there that likes it strong.
Yeah, it used to be like Dewars and water. Or Cuddy and water, and I could never handle that.
Oh.
I used to drink at least 12-year-old single malt, which is my wife's normal. But for her birthday, I bought her a bottle of 18-year-old single malt Scotch whiskey, and she has that under lock and key.
Well, see, it's your fault. You're spoiling her.
She's worth it.
There you go. Yeah, I have a buddy of mine, that's all he would drink was Dewars and water, and the water was kind of like, you know, it was like the accent. It was like, it was probably about as much water in the drink as there was a straw, so it was just an accent to give it a little flavor, I guess.
Brings out the aroma. It's like farm martinis. I buy the green olives and I put them in the refrigerator and they marinate in vermouth. So when I make vodka martinis, I just take a skewer and pick up three olives for each glass and add the vodka. And that's a perfect martini.
I'll take your word on it. Never been much for martinis. I know everybody else likes them, but I don't know. I never had much of a taste for them. I'm strictly I'm a beer guy. I like to, when I'm sitting up here at camp and I'm relaxed, I'm getting ready and thinking about tomorrow's hunt, I like to sit back and have a few cold ones. And it's better than having to work, which is usually what I got to do this time of the week. And I decided to start my weekend early.
Yeah, I heard you worked Saturday, Sunday, so you get Thursday, Friday off. I don't blame it. I'll drink beer, but unfortunately, my beer of choice is Guinness. I like the darker, heavier beers. This is from my time overseas and in Canada. Very partial to full-bodied beers. I cannot drink light beers.
When it comes to beer, there's always a time and a season for each one of them, I guess. Sometimes I like the darker, you know, richer beers. Usually I like them more with dinner or in lieu of a dinner sometimes. But the lighter beers I kind of like when it's hotter out and I'm looking to cool off really quick, and there's nothing like an ice-cold beer that's light and not heavy. I guess a lot of it just depends on the mood.
You know, my summertime beers were Labatt's.
lot of different ones I like. I like a lot of the blues. And the OV one I just like because, I don't know, it has a lot of memories from back in the day. Probably otherwise I wouldn't even drink it.
I don't want to open that up. Sometime I'll tell you a quick story about when I served 600 miles inside the Arctic Circle.
Oh boy, I thought they closed in that. Didn't I? I'm pretty sure I did. Yeah, the net's already closed. But yeah, 600 miles inside the circle, well, I don't even know if I would drink beer up there. It would have to be something a little harder.
Today, and we run a double slave out of Thule, Greenland, and Sondestrom, Greenland. I was up on Baffin Island. And we used to have the ice break come in once a year and resupply. And if you remember old Knickerbocker beer, that was free. Budweiser was a nickel a can. But every so often, one of the Canadian RAF pilots would come in. We had an emergency strip there. And he'd bring us a case or two of Labatt's. Well, that was Canadian Labatt's. It's not like what we get here. And boy, was I really disappointed when I got back home.
Yeah. Boy, when was this? You got cut off by the repeater ID there in the beginning. How long ago was this? KB2AIT.
KB2, yeah. It was another lifetime. It was back in the 70s.
Oh, Roger. Well, there isn't that long ago. I was alive in the 70s, so it wasn't that long ago. But, yeah, I wasn't allowed to drink Labatt's, let's just put it that way. It's funny, if you drink, when you leave the country and you drink beers with the same names that you drink here, they always taste different. I think they're just they're thrown on the label at a different brewery in a different country. You know, in a different country, they're thrown on the same label.
Well, if you ever get a chance to go to Germany and you have any Dortmunder or Weissbier that's brewed there, and you come back here and you get the same beer, it's imported. So what they do is they water it down probably by 50%.
Well, then it's not worth it, is it?
No, I'd rather go back to Germany.
Roger, I can understand that. I don't like anybody watering anything down. Just make it the way it's supposed to, you know. It's not like you can't buy anything stronger here, you know. So they shouldn't really be watering it down. But maybe that's their way of making you fly all the way over there.
Or re-enlist. One or the other. Real quick, in 10 words or less, your comments... I was copying the mail before on Lennox. I've been involved in Lennox for quite some time, way back when it first came out. Tried some different distributions, Corel, Red Hat, Mandica, and I wound up getting into Mark Shuttleworth's Ubuntu. And I've been with that. I'm up to like version, I think the last distribution was 12. Actually, I have 12.10. That's what you're running right now. The laptop in the kitchen is running 12.10.
Roger, usually that flavor is, that's what's reserved for desktops and laptops. I'm generally running servers, so I don't really care about as much about the desktop and graphics and anything. I'm just worried about getting the programs to execute correctly and run. They're not running anything graphical, so... that's why I usually stick with CentOS.
Yeah, I understood that. I'm just saying, for me here, I've got a small in-house network, which I'm going to, over the winter, redo. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 machines on the network.
Okay. What's your question about it?
It was just your thoughts on what you thought of Ubuntu.
I don't have a lot of experience with it myself. My desktop is usually Windows because a lot of the tools that I'm required to use are, I can only find there. Find there and still run efficiently, I should say. Everybody claims to have replacement tools for Windows, but they're not as efficient sometimes. As much as some try to play it off, as you know, a lot of times I can do things a lot faster with a lot of the Windows applications out there. But as far as server applications, it's a lot different. So I don't have a lot of experience with Ubuntu. I just don't. The only desktop version I ever used was actually CentOS, and it didn't impress me all that much as far as the desktop version.
Yeah, well, I think Rich was talking about computers. I go way back to when, and forgive me, age has diminished my memory capacity, but there was a computer that came out, I'm thinking, in the 60s, that you had to load the bootstrap via an audio cassette through a tape recorder into the machine. And when that played out, the next thing that came out was the VIC-20, then the Commodore 64, then went to the 128, and when we maxed those out, we started building our own. And it wasn't too long ago that I finally got rid of the 8088 that I built with two 8-inch drives.
I remember having a tape drive with my, it wasn't a VIC-20. I didn't have the tape drive with the Plus 4. I had it with the 64. I had a tape drive, and then I got the floppy drive. It wasn't an 8-inch, and then I remember getting the, what was that smaller one there? Jeez, I can't remember now. But I remember definitely having the tape drive, and I had the tape drive with the Timex, too. In fact, I remember that because you used to have to copy all the code out of the magazines or whatever you wanted to write your own applications from the you'd write the bytecode directly right in, and I don't miss that at all.
Sinclair was the name of the computer that we first got. Then we started building our own because we could do a lot better.
Roger, that was my first computer. It was made by Timex.
You remember those old things, huh?
I still have one.
If I have kept every computer I've either owned or built, I've got a computer here that I keep because it's running DOS to program Motorola radios.
If it works and you're happy with it, run it. That's what I always say.
Yeah, because if somebody was... As a matter of fact, it happened when we were in Texas. A gentleman brought me some 5-inch discs, and they were from Windows 95. And he wanted to know if I could put them on CD. So I said, sure. It took two machines and a few steps, but I was able to do it.
I don't even want to know why you would want that, but I don't know. I suppose he's probably had some equipment that required it.
Now, what he had is he had a lot of documentation on 5-inch floppies, and he wanted to retrieve it. He didn't have the machine anymore. He had a whole box of 5-inch floppies that he wanted me to put on a CD because there was documentation that he wanted to keep.
Couldn't you just load them from the disk onto a modern-day computer and then transfer them to, like, a thumb drive or something?
Well, yeah, but you had to have a machine that was slow enough and had a 5-inch drive.
Yeah, I got a pile of equipment in the back. I'm pretty sure I could probably follow one. Try to hook up... Whether I could find the driver or not, though, that would have been probably the hardest part.
Like I said, it wasn't all that difficult. It was pretty easy. I play a lot of stuff like that. Anyway, I'm going to thank you for allowing us to come in and giving us that info on the Earth's. Interesting. Very good. And I appreciate that comment about the fresh air on the pellet stove. I'm going to look into that more. I think maybe go that route. Jeff, thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Thanks for checking into my net. Enjoyed it. Take care of yourself, and good luck tomorrow. Put some venison in the freezer. KB2AIP, KB2EF.
Okay, Bob, it was definitely a pleasure, and I'll try to get in there again when you're on. I usually check in there on the Fridays and Saturdays. I haven't caught you on there, but and I would like to get some venison in the freezer. Up here in where I'm hunting is considered one of the hardest places to hunt in the state, and I've last couple of years I figured out why. You only see about one or two bucks a year up here, but anyway, thanks for checking in here tonight, and like I said, we're here every night, and feel free to come back and check in again. All right, KB2EF, this is KD2AIT, I'll be clear.
Okay, Jeff, yeah, I run the Wednesday night net, and normally I'm tied up in the evenings with Sherry coming in late, cooking dinner and the dog, so, and my brother-in-law, Scott, Whiskey 2 Sierra, Mike, he runs Friday night, so if there's anything important, he always gives me a phone call. Take care, bud. KB2, yep, it's clear.
Yep, we know Scott well. All right, good evening, KD2AAT.
Bye-bye.